have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Gay USA on the cusp of Christopher Street Liberation Day. I'm Andy Hump.
I'm Ann Northrup.
You saw that the U.S. Supreme Court ruled this past week that Philadelphia has to pay a Catholic agency to deliver anti-gay foster care services. We'll talk about the implications of that decision for LGBTQ rights and for religious freedom lawsuits going forward with James Essex, director of the ACLU LGBTQ and HIV Project.
And more than half a century after the Stonewall Rebellion, an active NFL player has come out for the first time. That's why I'm wearing my sports-related polo shirt. Because we have that and a bunch of other LGBTQ sports stories today.
The White House is hosting an LGBTQ history exhibit.
And another Mississippi city has voted to protect LGBTQ rights.
There was a tragic, fatal accident at the Pride March in Wilton Manors, Florida.
Terrible story. Conservative U.S. churches are in turmoil over social issues.
And the Vatican's bothering Italy again. A breakthrough for transgender veterans in the United States, but you're going to have to be patient about it.
yes, and a wave of anti-gay violence in South Africa.
And Guatemala these past weeks. Sesame Street has added some gay characters. It's about time. We welcome our guest, James Essex, director of the ACLU LGBTQ and HIV Project. James, that's a Lambda banner behind you. You want to clarify what's going on?
Sure. So, hey, Andy and Ann, wonderful to be with you. And I am still working for the ACLU, and I am in the D.C. office of Lambda Legal, are my good friends who are providing a little space down here. And so I'm in a room with the Lambda banner, and I'm happy to sort of promote their wonderful work as well.
With all the divisions in the world and in the community, that's wonderful. All right. So the case was Fulton v. City of Philadelphia, a woman who wanted to use Catholic social services to have foster care children, or she has in the past. Didn't like it that Catholic Social Services was being told by Philadelphia, you've got to comply with our anti-discrimination laws, including on LGBT. And the court ruled unanimously against her. And I just want to read the holding.
No, in favor of her.
I'm sorry, in favor of her, right,
yeah.
And against us. The refusal of Philadelphia to contract with Catholic Social Services for the provision of foster care services, unless CSS agrees to certify same-sex couples as foster parents, violates the free exercise clause of the First Amendment.
Sounds scary, but when you read a little further, the reality is this is certainly not a terrible decision for LGBTQ people, and actually best, you know, non-win scenario we could possibly get. And let me explain what that means. But let me do that a little bit by trying to put Fulton in context, because the context helps us understand what's going on in the Fulton case.
And her name was Fulton, and that's why it's called Fulton versus City of Philadelphia.
Exactly. And so the Fulton is one in a long line of cases that are about religious exemptions, where opponents of LGBTQ equality are trying to get courts, and especially the Supreme Court, to rule that there is a constitutional right to discriminate.
And we've said for many years, Catholic Services has a right to conduct its own foster care and adoption work any way they want. But the argument is, does the city, with a non-discrimination rule, have to hire them to work for them when they discriminate like this?
Absolutely. And so the issue was teed up here. Does the does this Catholic Social Services foster care agency have a constitutional right not just to discriminate, but to get a government contract and then change the terms of the government contract because it has a religious objection to some of those terms. And it wants to be able to do the government's work with the government's money, but to discriminate in the process in a way that, quite frankly, the city itself couldn't discriminate if it was doing the work itself. So the answer to that question should have been a clear no. It's not. The agency can't do that, and the city can absolutely enforce that non-discrimination law. That's not quite what we got
that's
here.
That's what the lower court said.
Exactly. That is what the lower court said. And this case was one of a series of cases where our opponents are trying to get this ruling that there's a constitutional right to discriminate. And the core thing that makes me feel like this is, you know, at least a problem that we avoided, that we dodged, and something that this is a ruling that is actually helpful for us, is that our opponents did not get what they wanted out of this decision. They wanted a ruling that deserved right to discriminate. They didn't get it. Here's what makes the case confusing. The court did three things. First, it said there's no right to discriminate in the Constitution. It says it certainly doesn't give that ruling. Second, it says that if the government that the government can enforce non-discrimination rules, like the rule that had in this contract with the foster care agency, so long as the rules are enforced even-handedly. But then it said the rule in this case, in this contract, was not an even discrimination rule. Why? Because there's a quirk in the way they wrote the contract, and the contract says, hey, folks, you can't discriminate on all these different bases, except if we say that you can. And the Supreme Court says, well, hold on. If that's not a ban on discrimination, that's something that allows discrimination when the city wants to and not when it doesn't, and that's something where all of a sudden the court is worried about the city discriminating against people of faith and not acknowledging, you know, not giving them an exemption when it would give other folks exemption. So what you end up with is a 9-0 ruling for the Catholic Social Services Agency and against Pennsylvania and the other LGBTQ folks who were helping the city of Philadelphia defend, but you get something that doesn't give the other side the ruling they want. And actually, just reading Justice Alito's dissent, you can see how mad the true anti-LGBTQ advocates out there, including on the court and in the world, are about the majority opinion, because they're like, this is something that is going to last 5 minutes, maybe.
Well, Alito said, you know, it's not worth the paper it's printed on. All Philadelphia has to do now is end all exemptions and they can get rid of Catholic social services. Do you think that's even likely that Philadelphia will do that at this point?
Well, so I don't know what Philadelphia is going to do and what the politics of that are. I do agree absolutely that Philadelphia has that option. Philadelphia can very easily simply change the terms of the non-discrimination rule in the contracts that it signs with all of the government contractors that it hires to do its work. And if it takes out this discretion thing where it says you can discriminate when we say you can, and just say you can't discriminate, then the Fulton decision no longer applies.
And the court also seemed like, you know, agitated. Hey, no gay couples have even gone to Catholic social services, and they go to these other agencies, so what's the problem? I mean, in New York, scores of religious agencies signed contracts with the city saying, oh, we won't discriminate, and we know them to be discriminatory organizations, anti-gay in many cases, but nobody ever takes them to task over it. But they sign a contract saying, we won't do it.
And in this instance, this religious agency refused to sign that contract, which is where the lawsuit came from. But the court's actually wrong about the assertion that nobody was turned away. No same-sex couple was turned away from this agency. But there was another agency in Philadelphia that also was religiously affiliated and had said that it would refuse to approve, certify as foster parents same-sex couples, and they did turn away a same-sex couple. But after the city found out about it and told them they needed to change their rules, they did. So this was actually a problem in the city of Philadelphia. The court's wrong about that.
So Roberts, in this case, wrote this sentence, I think would be of interest to our viewers. Our society has come to the recognition that gay persons and gay couples cannot be treated as social outcasts or as inferior in dignity and worth. Wow. And on the facts of this case, however, this interest cannot justify denying Catholic Social Services an exception for its religious exercise. But what meaning does a phrase like that, or the first part of that phrase, have for our litigation going forward?
Well, look, it's very helpful that the, most everyone on the court has signed on to a decision that recognizes that the government has an important interest in eradicating anti-LGBTQ discrimination. Now, that doesn't mean that we're going to win all these religious exemption cases that are coming down the pike, but it's a baseline, and it's helpful, and that is something that was in Justice Kennedy's decision in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, the case about the bakery that refused to sell a cake to a same-sex couple for its wedding, that had a very similar result 3 years ago, where the headlines were the bakery wins, but when you read it, it's like, okay, well, actually, they didn't get the right to discriminate. In that case, there was another separate reason that the court ruled technically for the bakery, but again, didn't establish the right to discriminate. So where we are here is that the opponents of LGBTQ equality have this big thing that they're trying to accomplish. Get the courts to rule that there's a right to discriminate. Now, for the second time in 3 years, the U.S. Supreme Court, first in the Masterpiece Cake Shop case and then last week in the Fulton case, has refused to give them that ruling. Now, they've done it not by ruling our way, so this is not a full win for us by any stretch, and it's concerning that they are not giving us that ruling because we wanted them to say, what are you talking about? Of course there's no constitutional right to discriminate here. But we don't have the votes for that, but they don't have the votes for the other side, the other ruling. The question is, okay, where do we go from here? And there are several other cases waiting in the wings, some of them LGBTQ related and some of them not, that may be vehicles for the Supreme Court to take up this question about a constitutional license to discriminate. And the court is actually going to conference, that is, consider and vote on whether to take up those cases in a conference tomorrow, and there will be orders coming out on Monday at 9:30 in the morning from that conference that could include either denials of review in those cases or grants of review in those cases. So we could know very soon what the next chapter looks like.
And are those the Texas and South Carolina cases?
They are cases, the ones I'm thinking of are cases. One is a non-LGBTQ case from Idaho that's about somebody who wants to sort of, has applied to be a contractor to do some kind of work for the state of Idaho, but the application requires that you fill out your Social Security number. And this person has a religious objection to using a Social Security number. And says, I'll give you my birth certificate to identify who I am instead of a Social Security number. Idaho says, nope, we need a Social Security number. And the question is, does this person have a free exercise of religion right to get an exemption from that otherwise neutral law that's just aimed at everybody, not aimed at creating a problem for religion? I think chances are probably decent that the court takes that one. There are two other petitions pending in the conference tomorrow that are LGBTQ related. One is a case called Dignity Health versus Minton, and this is a case about a trans man who was scheduled to get a hysterectomy at a hospital that does hysterectomies for cis women, but refuses to do it, he learned very late in the process, for trans people. And so the question is, does the hospital have a right to violate California's non-discrimination law that clearly applies to hospitals, including religious hospitals? So that's one LGBTQ context. And the other case is called Arlene's Flowers. And it's basically like the bakery case from a few years ago, but it involves flowers instead of a wedding cake.
So you mentioned the Masterpiece Cake Shop case. And yes, that was a technical decision that said the Colorado Human Rights Commission had made some anti-religious statements and thereby muddied and dirtied the case, and therefore they couldn't decide one way or another on the religious exemptions versus non-discrimination claims. But the headlines on that were all, you know, gays lose, religious baker wins. And they have continued to be for those 3 years intervening. That still is written up that way. And this case was written up that way as, you know, Catholic Services wins, Philadelphia and gays lose. How we talk often about whether the court makes legal decisions or whether there are politics and public opinion involved. And I wonder how you think all of that is going to play out in the future when the news media are so distorting and misrepresenting the results here.
Yeah, well, I certainly think that, you know, we have lost the battle for the headlines around what Fulton means. But if you read farther into the coverage, I think the most media outlets are getting it right in terms of the actual ruling and the details. But I think you're right, and that there's, you know, this is doing damage to the country's understanding of what the rules are. Right.
Oh, Jeffrey Toobin, back from his forced sabbatical on CNN, this was the first case that he had to talk about. And he said, oh, my God. And now gay couples can't adopt in Pennsylvania. Now, he's the legal expert. So the other anchors looked at him and said, well, I don't think that's what it says, Jeffrey. And he corrected himself. But that was that. But what's going to happen? Like, you know, all right, this was adoption services. There are many in Pennsylvania, many in Philadelphia. What's going to happen in a small state or city where there's only one Catholic hospital and they want to discriminate? Will the court look and say, well, then if you don't do it, they can't get the service?
Yeah. And so, but you're pointing out the, you know, why these issues are so consequential. This whole campaign for non-discrimination, for religious exemptions from non-discrimination rules, is a deliberate continuation of the efforts by anti-LGBTQ advocates to stop LGBTQ folks from getting any kind of non-discrimination rules in the first place. They didn't want us to get civil rights laws passed that cover us. They didn't want us to get the freedom to marry. They didn't want us to get rid of the express bans on adoption by LGBTQ people. And as we sort of have succeeded in getting some of those equality rules, they have gone from their plan A, which was just to stop that, to their plan B. And their plan B is to say, hey, if we have to live in a world that requires LGBTQ equality, we need some tool that's going to allow us to make sure that in as many contexts as possible, those rules don't apply to us. And religious exemptions are that tool, and that's why it's dangerous.
All human rights laws have religious exemptions. The Catholic Church doesn't have to ordain women under the human rights laws, the local human rights laws. But they want further religious exemptions in the Equality Act, even some of the moderates. Is that under discussion in the community, and will it still be an Equality Act? What could be traded away in the Equality Act, and it would still be an Equality Act?
Yeah, so there I'm definitely worried about a broadening of religious exemptions in the Equality Act, because this is, as I was saying, this is the other side's main sort of a tool to try to water down civil rights protections that we have. And look, I don't think our community is giving any ground on religious exemptions because of the kinds of harms that you pointed out, Andy, in terms of like, where does this could mean that people can't get the health care that they need in any community that's actually accessible to them. That's a terrible result, and that's not what equality looks like. So I truly think and believe that our community is going to stand fast and say, look, these are compromises that we can't agree to.
But I have to say that I am worried. I won't say pessimistic, but worried that a constitutional guarantee of religious freedom versus a law that is a non-discrimination law is inevitably going to be end up being decided in favor of the constitutional guarantee
of religion.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, so look, I too am worried that that's where this is going to end up. Just a few words on history. This is the LGBTQ context is not the first context in which claims for religious exemptions from civil rights laws have been raised. They would have been raised at earlier times when other civil rights laws have been enforced. So, for example, there's a famous case called Piggy Park, and it was about a chain of barbecue restaurants in North Carolina that, before the Civil Rights Act of 1964 became effective, openly operated on a racially exclusionary basis. White folks could be served. Black folks, you could go to the side counter and get stuff, but you couldn't come in and sit down. And they didn't change their practices after the Civil Rights Act became effective, and they were sued for race discrimination. And one of their defenses was, it's part of our religion. We have a religious belief that the races should not mix. And the U.S. Supreme Court, in a footnote, but they said, look, the argument, the idea that that religious free exercise rights override a race discrimination law is ridiculous. And the same thing has happened in the context of religious schools that were paying women less than men for doing the same job. And they said, we have a religious reason for this. And the court said, we don't care. The rule should be the same in the LGBTQ context. There's no reason it would be different. The thing that is so concerning about Fulton is that should have been the court's holding, that of course there's no constitutional right to discriminate that overrides a non-discrimination law like the one that Philadelphia was trying to.
And of course, the hardcore, like Alito and Thomas on the court, they want to overturn the wonderful Scalia precedent, which says if a law is generally applicable to the public, then you can't claim a religious exemption. If you're into human sacrifice, the murder laws still apply. It sounds absurd, but they want to overturn that.
They do, and many people saw the Fulton case as a vehicle for doing that. The court, you know, I think Chief Justice Roberts assembled a majority to say, we're not going there. We don't have to go there because of this quirk in Philadelphia's contract. This is not an issue that's going to go away. I think there are several of the cases that I mentioned earlier are also cases where the question of this earlier decision in Employment Division versus Smith will be up for grabs. And that's something that, you know, doesn't just affect LGBTQ people and our civil rights laws. It could have changing the Smith standard could have a much broader implication and set of applications to civil rights law for everybody, but also every kind of regulation that there is in our society.
So let me suggest that given those precedents you've cited about race and gender and religious exemptions not being recognized for those kinds of discrimination, that we are at a point in history where we are trying to get on that same footing, but we are not there yet. And you have only to look at the marriage cases to find that even the majority legalizing same-sex marriage allowed for objections to same-sex marriage as legitimate, and that we need to get to a point where, you know, people, the religious right, whomever, claim that it is insane to call them bigots for discriminating against us. And we actually need to get to the point where people understand that discriminating against us is bigotry, and that we should not be afraid to call that out. And that is the way we win these cases against claims of religious exemptions.
And you're totally right. We are collectively, our entire movement, are in the process of building within the culture a norm of non-discrimination against LGBTQ people. And that norm is not nearly as strong as it needs to be. It's not nearly as strong yet as other kinds of non-discrimination norms are in our society. As we build that, claims for religious exemptions are going to seem more like discrimination and less like religious freedom. The problem is right now people see claims by a Catholic hospital that they don't want to provide health care to trans people as religion and not discrimination, when we see it as it is discrimination because it's based on people's religious beliefs, but it is causing harm to third parties. And that's discrimination. So we're not there yet, but that is the fight that we're involved in. And what's important here is that people understand that these cases really are about trying to get a right to discriminate and not about religious freedom, because they are an extension of the same advocacy by the same organizations trying to stop LGBTQ equality measures from advancing. This is just the new version of it, and it's prettied up with religious freedom all over it. But that's what's going on.
Meanwhile, the Colorado Baker, Jack Baker.
Jack Phillips.
Jack Phillips, I apologize. He's a baker. I call him Jack Baker, Jack the Baker. He was fine. He's in the Masterpiece cake shop case. He was fined for refusing to make a transgender transition cake. So this could be, act two of that. But what about that and all the anti-trans laws that are passing in the states that the ACLU is fighting with the help of the Department of Justice now?
Yes. Yeah, so look, on the new Masterpiece cake shop case, Scandina, I think is the name of the case. Yes, the trial court in Colorado said, look, Masterpiece can't discriminate. And that follows from our reading of the Masterpiece cake shop decision from the Supreme Court, which is they don't get to override the non-discrimination law. So we'll see I'm sure we've not heard the end of that case. That case is going to go on up through the court system, and that could be another one in line that might get to the U.S. Supreme Court. The last thing, you mentioned the lawsuits that we have against several of the anti-trans laws in the states. We and Lambda Legal, all partners, have sued the state of West Virginia over its ban on trans girls and women in sports. And we've also sued, just the ACLU on its own, with Sullivan Cromwell Law Firm, the state of Arkansas over its ban on gender-affirming care. And in both of those cases, the United States Department of Justice has, as you mentioned, filed a statement, what's called a statement of interest. It has filed a brief supporting the claims by trans folks that both of these measures in both West Virginia and Arkansas violate the Constitution, violate federal statutes. That's a big deal to have the government on our side.
Well, it's a nice change. So we're on this long road. I've always thought we are privileged to live in this time and be part of this fight and watch all this develop. We have a long way to go, but it is you and your colleagues who are really driving this, and we appreciate all the work you're doing, and thank you for coming to talk to us about it today.
And again, that is James Essex, director of the ACLU's LGBTQ and HIV project, not from Lambda Legal, but we love Lambda Legal as well.
Yes.
And you can learn about, we've got your URL there, ACLU.org, if you want to learn more about the project.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be with you.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks, James. Bye. Good luck.
On to sports news.
And now from the sports desk.
Well, I mean, the big news this week, of course, was the National Football League has its first out active player who's actually been on the field in an NFL game. Carl Nassib, and maybe
Nassib.
Nassib. He's a defensive end with the Las Vegas Raiders. Came out on Instagram, and I loved his Instagram post, so why don't we roll the videotape?
What's up, people? I'm Carl Nassib. I'm at my house here in Westchester, Pennsylvania. Just want to take a quick moment to say that I'm gay. I've been meaning to do this for a while now, but I finally feel comfortable enough to get it off my chest. I really have the best life. I got the best family, friends, and job a guy could ask for. I'm a pretty private person, so I hope you guys know that I'm really not doing this for attention. I just think that representation and visibility are so important. I actually hope that, like, one day videos like this and the whole coming out process are just not necessary. But until then, you know, I'm going to do my best and do my part to cultivate a culture that's accepting, that's compassionate. And I'm going to start by donating $100,000 to the Trevor Project. They're an incredible organization. They're the number one suicide prevention service for LGBTQ youth in America. And they're truly doing incredible things. And I'm very excited to be a part of it, to help in any way that I can. And I'm really pumped to see what the future holds. That's all I have for you guys. I hope you have a great day. Work hard.
Well, thank you. He agonized over that for 15 years, he said.
Well, and he's 28, so that's since he was 13 years old, which I think we can all identify with. Now, Carl is 6'7", is a defensive lineman, was a big star at Penn State after being a walk-on to the team, ended up being the Big Ten Defensive Lineman of the Year, an All-American, a really good player.
Played he's a five-year veteran, also played with the Cleveland Browns and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Got a lot of support from his players and the NFL. The NFL matched his donation to the Trevor Project,
right.
$100,000. How about a million? But all right, they'll take it. He's under contract through 2022. He played college ball at Penn State, and he's on a three-year, $25 million contract. Roger Goodell, who is the commissioner, said he's proud of him and hopes that, again, as we march towards full equality for the LGBTQ community, we've got the NFL on our side, apparently.
Well, look, his statement is wonderful and very matter-of-fact, which I thought was terrific. And he is getting unanimous support at this point. We'll see what happens when he gets out on the field. But I really have a sense that we have now reached a point in 2021 where things have changed, and I can see him getting support, and I can see more people coming out in the NFL. You may be a little confused because Michael Sam was out 7 years ago, but he never actually played an NFL game. He came out while he was still in college. He was drafted by NFL teams and went to a couple of them, but never ended up playing in the regular season. And then we had Jason Collins, who played briefly in the NBA after he was out. But this is a big deal to have an active NFL player come out, and yeah, I think it's good.
Jason Collins didn't exactly trigger an avalanche of basketball players coming out, nor some of these big soccer stars coming out. But let's not forget Dave Cope back in 1975, after his playing days, the first NFL pro to come out. He turned 79 on Monday. Happy birthday, Dave. By the way, Carl's brother, Ryan, was a backup quarterback for the New York Giants. But Carl appeared, for those of you not into sports, he appeared on this HBO series, Carl, Hard Knocks, where he famously offered financial advice to his teammates.
Well, that is a football series. It followed a team. But yeah, that was very cool. All right. So this is not the only sports story this week.
We have a ton of them.
Starting with Sha'Carri Richardson, 21 years old, who won the 100-yard dash in the U.S. Olympic trials and will be representing the United States in Tokyo. I cross my fingers because Tokyo is a little dicey these days, but they say they're going ahead with the Olympics.
She embraced her grandma immediately afterwards. She had lost her biological mother last week. Her girlfriend encouraged her orange hair in order that she stand out, but she's also raced with red, blonde, and blue hair, and Tokyo will be a surprise.
So she, as the winner of the 100-yard dash, is the fastest woman in the United States. And if she wins in Tokyo, she'll be the fastest woman in the world.
10.86 seconds for her 100-meter. The Mets had their Pride Night on June 25th at Citi Field. But now we're on to...
Wait a second. Also on the U.S. Olympic team is a trans woman, Chelsea Wolf, who is a BMX rider, which is a sort of dirt bike kind of thing, an alternate on the team, so may or may not get to compete in the Olympics, but is on the team as an out trans woman.
And trans weightlifter Laurel Hubbard, 43 years old, will definitely be the first trans athlete to compete in the Olympics from New Zealand says she's grateful and humbled. Also the fourth oldest weightlifter in the Olympics. She's in the super heavyweight category in Tokyo. She won the silver at the 2017 World Championships. Olympic guidelines require trans women to have a total testosterone level in serum below 10 nanomoles per liter for 12 months. So there are standards here. You can't just declare yourself a woman and go compete with women.
No, and she meets those standards and has for years. Now, currently in Europe, they're playing the Euro Cup soccer tournament, which is a very big deal, second only to the World Cup. And there is a dispute because the mayor of Munich, Germany, wants to light up his stadium where Germany is playing a game against Hungary in rainbow colors, to object to Hungary's anti-LGBTQ standards these days. It's no promo homo law, and it's President Viktor Orban who is such a bigot. But the ruling body of European soccer is refusing to let the mayor of Munich do that. And soccer stadiums around Europe and cities around Europe are going to light themselves up in rainbow colors to object to this decision and to support the Munich mayor's desire to support the LGBTQ community.
But that same ruling body is allowing German goalkeeper Manuel Neuer, who's been wearing a rainbow armband in honor of Pride Month. The EU Football Association looked into whether it violated the rules. You're not allowed to make on-field political statements. They don't want any swastikas out there. But it's they said it stood for diversity and was a good cause. So he's allowed to...
Well, evidently it's a question of size. If you wear an armband, you can promote diversity, but lighting up the whole stadium to promote diversity is a little too much. But the world body of soccer has punished once again the Mexican soccer team for its fans' homophobic slurs and chants. So they're having the next two World Cup qualifying games that Mexico plays at home, they will not be allowed to have any fans in the stadium. The Mexican team keeps pleading with its fans to stop calling its opponent, all its opponents, faggots.
It's too satisfying for them.
Exactly. They won't
stop. They did it because we said no.
Well, predictably, I'm sure. It would be nice if there were another way to talk them out of it, but the fans are standing firm in their bigotry, so they won't be allowed to come to the games.
In better news, international soccer star Kumi Yokoyama, 27, has come out as a trans man. One of Japan's most recognized soccer players didn't feel safe to come out until they were in America. They currently play for the Washington Spirit in the NWSL, transitioning for years. The coach said, "We have no time for hate. We only have time for love." Their girlfriend encouraged them to come out.
And as James Essex mentioned, the Departments of Justice and Education in the Biden administration are supporting Becky Pepper Jackson, 11 years old from West Virginia, in her lawsuit to run cross country as a trans girl. They're making a Title IX argument, so we will keep following that. It's great to have the Biden administration doing that. And it's great to have the governor of Louisiana, John Bel Edwards, veto the anti-trans sports bill. So that's a great step forward.
Not done with sports. Ann and I, of course, killed our weekend watching the U.S. Open men's golf tournament. There was a person who ran onto the course with a rainbow cape, took two shots with what is reported to be a good swing, then performed a dance, ran away, got tackled, arrested, no charges filed. He's been identified as a guy named Connor Murphy, who showed up for a Monday qualifier on the tour once, high on psychedelics.
And evidently he was wearing some kind of pink tube top, too.
It was a lot of fun. And you don't get to see much color on the golf course.
It used to be streakers naked at these events. Now it's a guy wearing a rainbow flag cape.
Didn't this unnerve Bryson DeChambeau, the former champ or something? Anyway, whatever. All right. All right.
You're making that up.
No, I think they talked about it at the press conference.
Well, a lot of things upset Bryson.
The winner was John Rahm, the first player from Spain to win. He's only 26 years old. And he had to drop out of a tournament 2 weeks ago because he was diagnosed with COVID.
Yes, exactly.
Even though he did get a vaccine, but he didn't wait 14 days for it to kick in.
All right. Well, we are also happy that the White House is celebrating Pride this month in various ways. But now they've put up an LGBTQ plus history exhibit inside the White House. You can see the various rainbow lighting effects on the corridor there.
And they are having a Pride reception there in Washington.
The element of the exhibit that impressed me, I can't remember whether I knew this. It turns out that Grover Cleveland's sister was the White House
hostess,
yes, for him before he married. And she turns out to have had a 30-year relationship with Evangeline Whipple, and they are buried side by side somewhere in Italy.
Absolutely.
Nice.
We are everywhere. All right. The Department of Veterans Affairs will now offer, eventually, gender-affirming surgeries for transgender veterans. It was announced by Secretary Dennis McDonough at an Orlando Pride event, said the change will take time, maybe years, don't wait too long. Just get it done in the Biden administration. Also, they changed the name to the LGBTQ plus health program at the VA, and they're displaying VA rainbow magnets to let everyone know you're welcome here.
And also, as James says, the Department of Justice has entered the case in Arkansas over Arkansas's law barring medical help for trans youth. The Justice Department says that's wrong.
What happened at the Stonewall this week?
Well, you know how we talk frequently about how corporations show up for Pride or do very good things about supporting their LGBTQ plus employees or whatever. But at the same time, they're giving tons of money to right-wing politicians like Arkansas legislators who are passing laws against us. And it's a terrible situation, and we don't hold them accountable enough. Well, this weekend, the Stonewall Inn will not be serving Anheuser-Busch beers because Anheuser-Busch is one of the corporations giving to right-wing politicians. And this morning, as we are broadcasting or taping on Wednesday, they held a pouring out of Anheuser-Busch beers at the Stonewall, beers into the gutter to symbolize their horror at Anheuser-Busch supporting right-wing politicians. So thank you to the Stonewall Inn. I think that's a great decision.
Well,
and thank you to Donna.
And it's only for the weekend.
It's a start. thank you to Donna Aceto, who took that picture for us. And
that nice picture we sent out last week with our email, and you can be on our email list by going to gayusatv.org, of Larry Mass and Larry Kramer and Roger McFarland, was also taken by Donna Aceto. Thank you, Donna, for that.
Legendary photographer for the community.
And tireless.
Yes. All right. Well, we better hurry up or we're going to run out of time.
Well, there was that horrible accident at Pride in Wilton Manors, Florida, an accidental car and another seriously injured. The out gay mayor originally said it was a terror attack, and it sure looked like that. But this was an older guy in the chorus, gay chorus, who lost control of the vehicle that he was going to be in the parade in, and it just plowed through the crowd well into a business, and it was just awful.
Everybody is devastated.
Pride was suspended.
But not accidental was the deliberate work of a guy in a truck in Delray Beach, Florida, who decided he was going to have his way with a rainbow crosswalk, and he proceeded to leave support. That's a Trump flag on the back of his pickup truck.
He did it in honor of Donald's birthday, and he may be prosecuted under the new Florida law against vandalism at demonstrations.
Which was passed to get BLM protesters, but is going to be used against him. He was arrested. Right. All right. So we told you about the trans cake in Colorado that the baker, Jack Phillips.
In Rosedale, Mississippi, the city council passed LGBTQ inclusive law, anti-discrimination ordinance under Mayor Alicia Thomas.
In Atlanta, Georgia, the mayor has signed a law mandating 100 gender neutral bathrooms. Now, frankly, that could you could use all those up in the airport and the stadium, but that's a start, too.
Another murder of a trans person, a trans man, E.J. Boykin, 23, shot to death June 14th in Lynchburg, Virginia. It is a homicide, and they are searching for a suspect, but have not classified it as a hate crime. Police think it may have been a domestic dispute.
In Milton, Massachusetts, one of my old hometowns, a gay male couple has found out after several years that their neighbors were harassing them and signing them up for magazine subscriptions with homophobic names on them. A friend tracked that down, but that's discouraging.
With our 12 minutes left, I do want to allude to the turmoil in American churches over LGBT, abortion, all those kinds of things. The Catholic bishops have brought shame on themselves trying to bar Joe Biden and Pelosi from Holy Communion, showing their fealty to Trump over the Pope or Jesus even. The move won't ultimately succeed under their rules. They can't really pass it. But it's a nice distraction from the molestation scandals. And three cheers from that former Vatican priest and Latin scholar, Francesco Lepore, 45, who really spilled the beans about behind-the-scenes sex lives of the priests and cardinals and bishops at the Vatican. He was a great source for the book, The Closet of the Vatican. And he's become a gay activist.
And he's become a Latin podcaster for the Vatican again.
And he says the bishops use girly names for each other, naming one Platinette after a famous Italian drag queen. I mean, these people who are, and of course, you know, in Italy, they're trying to pass a big gay rights law, and the Vatican is opposed to that, saying it's going to make us ordain women. No, it's not.
Interesting news from the Williams Institute, which says there are 1.2 million people in the U.S. identifying as non-binary. And a new poll finds that 23% of young Mormons identify as not heterosexual.
And the U.S. Southern Baptists are having a big split between the extreme right and the far right, with Trump representing the extreme right. But they managed to elect a slightly less conservative Ed Litton as their leader. The extreme right worries about the drift on race, gender, and strict authority of their Bible.
As statues are coming down and places are being renamed, Morris Garden in the Bronx is going to be renamed for the legendary Mabel Hampton. You want to read some of her?
Yeah, she was a lesbian activist and dancer during the Harlem Renaissance, lived from 1902 to 1989, very prominently featured by Sage. She lived with her longtime partner, Lillian Foster, in the Bronx and was Grand Marshal of the New York City Pride in 85. She was given the Lifetime Achievement Award of the National Coalition of Black Lesbians and Gays. We love Mabel.
Also a major player at the Lesbian History Archives and hung out there a lot. There's a lot of information about her there in Brooklyn.
Mayor Bottoms of Atlanta signed an order to make 100 gender-neutral city restrooms.
We did that.
All right.
Save time. Move on to international news.
And we're not going to tell you about the New York primaries because we don't know what happened.
No. In South Africa, brutal hate crime murders. Two lesbians... Ande Benger and Lulema Mvandaba, the second one volunteered at an AIDS organization, and a gay man, Masishole Level, all murdered. Activists are demanding government action in reference to these hate crimes. The government is doing nothing. 200 people marched in a Queer Lives Matter march, but nothing is happening to deal with this.
And in Guatemala, two trans women and one gay man killed in separate attacks, 13 total this year, 20 last. This is a small country. Human Rights Watch says the government provides LGBTQ people with virtually no protection. Both of the trans women were involved in the major trans rights groups there, and they complained about the death threats, and the government took no action.
In Poland, where the LGBTQ community is under horrible attack from the government, thousands showed up to march for a Warsaw Equality Parade, including the mayor of Warsaw and representatives of 14 other countries, including the U.S. So they're fighting back.
The U.S. Charge d'Affaires tweeted, "Choose love, not hate." By the way, parenthetically, lesbian writer Masha Gessen in The New Yorker, herself Russian, said Biden got rolled by Putin, but maybe better than licking Putin's boots as Trump did.
In Mexico, two trans women have been chosen for the lower house of the Congress. Maria Clemente Garcia, Salma Luvano. They're both longtime activists, and they want jobs. They want affirmative action. They want to address poverty among the trans community, and they want non-discrimination laws.
All right.
In Israel, the foreign ministry raised a rainbow flag outside their Jerusalem headquarters. And of course, the far right parties freaked out about that. And interesting from Israel, it turns out that the most Google searches for conversion therapy are in Israel, followed by Costa Rica, New Zealand, Canada, and the U.S. in fifth place. So Google has decided that when people search for conversion therapy online, they're going to offer ads for LGBTQ-affirming organizations in those searches.
All right. Hey, Sue?
Sure.
Well, Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS had their Broadway Bears Twerk From Home event. It raised almost $350,000 for the organization so far. You can watch the video online at BroadwayCares.org/Bears2021, and we will link to it in our email in the culture section.
Sesame Street.
They have introduced a family with two gay dads on its Family Day episode last week. Nina introduces her brother and his husband, as well as their daughter, to Elmo and his friends. And this is, after all these years, a milestone for the show.
Wow. After 150 years, Sesame Street finally includes a same-sex couple.
Well, what about Bert and Ernie? You know, I mean...
What about Bert and Ernie? We want to alert you that the Queens World Film Festival on June 28th is going to be running Surviving the Silence, the great movie about Margaret Kammermeyer, but more about Patsy Thompson, who was a closeted lesbian in charge of discharging Margaret Kammermeyer, agonized over it, and eventually came out herself. So if you... check out the Queens World Film Festival.
It's June 28th, and we will link to that in our email so that you can plug into it. And, of course, I eventually hope that this gets seen on cable or streaming services. The untold story of two women in love who helped change military policy. And that, of course, includes Patsy Thompson's partner, wife, Barbara Brass.
Now, it's going to be a busy weekend here in New York because the last weekend in June is the height of the Pride festivities.
I know. I have to go rest up.
And there may be stuff everywhere you are, too. But if you are in the New York area, you're going to want to start with the drag march on Friday evening, which takes off from Tompkins Square Park at 8 p.m. The previous hour will be devoted to dressing up. So feel free to show up a little early there, but then they'll march from Tompkins Square Park over to Sheridan Square from east to west. Always a lot of fun, always very easy and casual and safe. highly recommend the Drag March. And then on Saturday, the Dyke March gathers at Bryant Park and takes off from there at 5 p.m. to go down Fifth Avenue to Washington Square Park.
Bryant Park is at 6th Avenue and 41st Street, right behind the public library.
Yep. Again, a very casual gathering, no contingents, no wristbands or anything, just people gathering. The theme this year is Black Dyke Power.
But it is a women-only march, basically, right?
It is, although that has been a little observed in the breach in more recent years, so it's a little looser, but men are certainly welcome on the sidelines to support. That would be the polite thing to do, but everyone's welcome in one way or another at the Dyke March on Saturday at 5, Bryant Park. And then Sunday is the Queer Liberation March, third annual edition. No particular theme this year other than queer liberation. And we are gathering at Bryant Park also. I can see that's becoming a place for the LGBTQ plus events. Gathering at 2:30-ish and a 3 o'clock step-off planned. If it gets too crowded before then, we'll just start whenever we reach critical mass. There will be a bus for people who wish to use it because they have a particular disability or just a desire to ride a bus. That'll go out just ahead of the march. And there will be wheelchairs available for people who want to use those. But the march will go west a block on 41st Street and then down 7th Avenue because we march with the traffic and down 7th Avenue to Sheridan Square at the Stonewall Inn and then hang a left to go east to Washington Square Park to disperse there. We were going to have a rally with speakers and performers, but for various reasons, we've decided not to do that. So it'll just be a pure march. And there is a health fair connected to it, and that will involve offering COVID vaccinations, and ACT UP is helping run that along with the City Department of Health and the and Reclaim Pride, which produces the Queer Liberation March, and they will be doing joints for jabs. You get a vaccination, you get handed a joint if that is your desire.
Well, the first march went up to the Sheep Meadow in 1970, and they just had a gay in, but those were the hippie days.
Yes. Well, this will be a sort of informal gay in. There are three of our Reclaim Pride members who held a press conference today to talk about the Joints for Jabs vaccination effort. So come join us on Sunday, get a COVID vaccine, get a joint, or just have protest in anger or joy at the Queer Liberation March.
You don't have to smoke if you don't want to.
Gave it up years ago.
Well, and I never have because I'm, you know, whatever I am. But I live with people who did. Anyway, have a wonderful Pride Month. Enjoy the weekend. New York City Pride is doing some stuff, too, in the middle of the day.
They are. They're having and that will be seen online, and they'll have a few hundred people in the street coming down Fifth Avenue earlier in the day.
Thanks for being with us. We'll be back next week.